Hello, everyone. I'm excited to introduce Rebecca Gorman. She's the brain behind Aligned AI and has been advocating for ethical AI for years. So very exciting stuff, Rebecca. Your journey with AI started around 20 years ago. What initially drew you to this field, and how have your Silicon Valley roots influenced your perspective on responsible AI?
I was really fascinated. And by the way, it's an honor to be on your podcast, and thank you for that brilliant introduction. And it's a pleasure to meet you today and to be having this conversation here with you. I was first introduced to AI in the context of using it to make business decisions based off of making predictions about consumers, their motivations, how to affect their buying choices. And what really fascinated me about artificial intelligence at the time was how we could use these statistical sciences to try to get down to the roots of causality. Why did more people buy a product after a certain promotion happened? Would they do it again if we made the same kind of promotion? And there were a lot of confounding variables that made it difficult to really get down at the roots of causality. Sometimes multiple things had the same cause. Sometimes what looked like causation was really correlation. And the science of machine learning at the time hadn't really gotten to the point where we could really tease those things apart. And if we wanted to make even better decisions and draw even better insights, we were going to have to extend the science. Mm-hmm. And I found that really fascinating. And I wanted to extend what we can do, what we can infer with machine learning. Mm-hmm. It turns out that even today, 20 years later, the artificial intelligence we're building today actually has the same limitations of the artificial intelligence we were building 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's learning correlations and treating them like causation. It confuses a correlated variable for a causal one. And this leads to artificial intelligence's breaking, misbehaving, degrading, needing to be retrained. And it leads to artificial intelligences that are making decisions based off of correlated variables such as gender and race, rather than causative variables such as competence or creditworthiness, for instance. So when it comes to both ethical AI and safe AI, we need artificial intelligence that doesn't confuse correlation with causation and can track concepts like human-like concepts, even in new environments, situations, new data sets. So that's what we're working to do at Aligned AI. We're a deep tech company. We're extending what you can do with machine learning by taking a look at the assumptions that go into models and reducing those limitations.
Very interesting. Can you linger a little bit more on the goals of Aligned AI?
So we're doing two things that people often in social media today are treating as opposing goals. We're making artificial intelligence safer and more ethical. And right now there's this debate on social media. Do you take resources away from making AI ethical to make it safe, or do you take resources away from making AI safe to make it ethical? It's actually what we've discovered at our organization, the same problem. My co-founder comes from the AI alignment community. I come from the AI ethics community. I want to make sure that AI isn't discriminating against people. It's not turning people down for jobs because they don't view enough anime websites, or they list female chess champion, women's chess champion on their CV instead of just regular chess champion. We don't want AI that makes those kinds of decisions. But they're actually the same problem, because artificial intelligence that understands precisely what you want and isn't confusing it with correlated features is artificial intelligence that is not going to discriminate based off of the wrong kinds of variables that you can give instructions to, like hire an applicant based on their competence without regard to gender or race. It's also an AI that won't destroy the world because you can tell it something like, don't destroy the world, and it knows what you mean. So it's actually the same problem. And it's also, fascinatingly enough, this is a safety problem that's also a capabilities problem. Artificial intelligence that can do precisely what you've asked it to do, understands your instructions in a human-like way, is also a more capable artificial intelligence that you can get to do more things.
Very interesting. And with the rise of, you know, LLMs and generative models, this line between causation and correlation, I think, has blurred even more because of the large pre-trained generative models. It seems like people start to forget about how important data is really when you're using generative AI models. So how have you seen this AI landscape evolve over this rise of generative AI and large language models?
It does seem these days that when you say AI, people are just thinking you're meaning generative AI now. It is the hot topic, and the data sets are really interesting for generative AI. The data sets were collected by programmers, so they did what they do for what they do best is they wrote scripts to scrape the internet. And so we have generative AI that's kind of a statistical model of what people say on the internet. And some of that's really, really good material. Some of it is very questionable material. And some of it is terrible material. And you've heard different accounts about that. So then it's fine-tuned, or it's given a reward model, or both. And these are crafted using human feedback and human crafting to augment some aspects of the internal data structure of that large language model. And sometimes it has unintended consequences because the fine-tuning and reward models being used today on foundation models are a very crude tool. So if I said, the sun doesn't revolve around the earth revolves around the sun, and then a human was rating this, the human will probably, you know, my guess, the human's either going to say this was good or bad. It's either going to have a positive or negative impact on the reward model or the fine tuning for your large language model. But I want to negatively disincentivize the first half of that sentence, where someone's being rude and impolite and using negative language. And I want to positively incentivize the second half of that sentence where they're saying that the earth goes around the sun. But because of the way that the reward is given today, the large language model might be getting the message that saying that the earth goes around the sun is negative information, and to reduce that in the model in the same process in that it's becoming more polite. So we're using really crude tools to kind of bring surface some information and behaviors in these language models and reduce others. Sometimes it has unintended consequences, and it's also hackable, which we can go more into if you're interested.
Yeah, I have seen quite a few interesting prompts for jailbreaking large language models, and I have actually even seen studies about what you have just described, where basically using these prompts, models were asked, you know, controversial questions. And basically almost all of the latest large language models, especially OpenAI, would vote Democrat when used with such jailbreaking prompts. So this poses another question, is like, how can we ensure that such powerful generative AI models are used ethically and responsibly?
That's a really good question. And there's a lot of dimensions to that question. So one question about using these large language models ethically and responsibly is how do we stop them from being jailbreaked? There's a lot of negative behaviors or negative ideas that were actually trained into these models with the original data set, because basically the whole internet was used to train. There wasn't a lot of removal of negative information in advance in the models that are out there today. So with these jailbreaking techniques, it's possible to bring out behaviors that you wouldn't normally, that a lot of people wouldn't want these models to have. But then there's the question of, do these models represent or kind of embed a specific culture and a specific value system and a specific political orientation within that value system, which I think you were getting at. And I think that is a much more difficult question to address, because obviously every country is going to have its own perspectives on what is appropriate behavior for a large language model. And every culture is going to have its own opinion on that. And this might need to be culturally determined. If the legal system is different in the UK and the US, what it means to be law abiding, for instance, would be different in each of those scenarios. So you would need to have a large language model that's sensitive to those differences.
Yes, certainly. I agree. Even if, you know, it seems like European and United States governments can't even agree on, you know, how iPhones should be regulated. Like, you know, we have seen all these laws in Europe just recently on that, you know, batteries in all smartphones should be replaceable by 2024, which I feel like something that would never pass in the United States. So how do you address these differences in regulation across countries? And do you think AI needs to be addressed right now? Do you think it needs to be regulated right now?
I definitely believe that AI needs to be regulated. I do think that one of the really nice things about generative AI is, in terms of policy, is that it's really easy for anyone to interact with generative AI, especially since the introduction of ChatGPT. A lot of people don't realize this, but the foundation models behind ChatGPT were available to anyone with the technical skills to access them since 2020. But ChatGPT really made it really easy for anyone at any level of technical skill to interact with foundation models. And that's led to a lot of awareness of exactly what level of capabilities these models have, how they perform in different situations, and helping people to kind of imagine what impacts they'll have on our lives in the near term and in the longer term future. AI previous to foundation models has been having a huge impact on our life, especially for the last maybe 14 years. Ever since the introduction of Web 2.0, a lot of your listeners maybe know this term. And Web 2.0, it looked, in terms of the user experience of the web, it looked like a bunch of bright interfaces with bubbles and buttons. But what it really was about was starting to apply artificial intelligence on the back end of websites, not just serving you ads, but selecting what news stories to show you when you reach a news website, or what posts you see on social media, Instagram, TikTok, even what search results you get are tailored to you based off of things you've done in the past, what websites you've viewed, how long you were there, where you hovered on the page, even how late do you stay up at night, how early do you wake up in the morning, who have you met with, who lives in your home, who sleeps in your bed. All of these things have impacted the information that you receive through your phone, through your laptop, through artificial intelligence, making decisions about who you are, who you're like, how you think, what information it thinks will engage you. Mm-hmm. And that's been invisible to us. We haven't had a conversation about that type of artificial intelligence because we don't see it. The website looks the same to us, whether it's there or not. We don't notice the difference. Only the back end of the website notices the difference. So it's in a similar place to where ChatGPT was in 2020 when it existed, but people didn't know it was there. Mm-hmm. So generative AI has made artificial intelligence legible. So that's the one really hopeful thing about generative AI. It's making artificial intelligence and its impacts on our lives legible to the general public. It's helping to spur this conversation. A second positive impact is that in some ways, generative AI is easier to control than the previous generations of AIs that were less legible and they were invisible behind your screen without you knowing they were there. Not only were those forms of AI less legible to the consumer, they're also less legible to the developer. The developer has lines of code. They're trying to tell the artificial intelligence in their program what to do, what to optimize for, but they're just guessing. They're optimizing various numbers. With generative AI, if you have it, say, sitting behind TikTok, this is not, as far as I know, TikTok's not doing this. They should. If you had an AI algorithm sitting behind TikTok, looking at the post that you're going to show to a teenage child, for instance, and you tell that generative AI, based off of the recent videos that you've shown this child, is this next video clip going to be one that's positive or negative for their mental health? I think that would be a safer algorithm than the one that TikTok deploys today. And once we start thinking about the potential of generative AI to aid our older, more traditional AI systems in actually adding safety to those older systems, I think we're actually going to save lives on social media.
Very interesting. Yeah, I also feel like AI has become a lot more visible since the release of ChatGPT, because basically everything that ChatGPT could do, GPT-3 was also able to do, but it was only accessible via API.
Exactly.
So nobody really did these things. And now, you know, that we have ChatGPT, basically it's spreading so fast that, you know, nobody could have even expected anything like this. So are you excited about any particular research or applications of AI, not necessarily even generative AI, but just looking into the future?
Well, we're particularly excited about the research we're working on in-house here at Aligned AI. We're helping all artificial intelligence systems, both generative AI and more traditional systems like computer vision, tabular data, classifiers, etc., to behave properly out of distribution. So in context where the data from the environment around the AI, whatever that means in this particular context, is different from the data that it was trained on. And that's going to really extend the possibilities of what can be done with artificial intelligence.
And how can we be sure of mid to long-term impacts of the use of AI?
Mid to long-term impacts of the use of AI. It's hard, I think, for us to imagine what the total impact of artificial intelligence is going to be. I think that even today, we're still figuring out what the mid to long-term impacts of social media are. And we're still figuring out what the mid to long-term impacts of the internet are. And but we can speculate on a few of them. One very interesting midterm impact of generative AI is going to be that the way that we search for information is going to change. So over the past 20 years, we've really gotten to this model of checking search engines for information. But with the advent of generative AI, it's become extremely easy to do search engine optimization and generate a lot of text at a rapid pace, not all of which is accurate. This is going to change the way that the usefulness of search engines. And I think it's why Google did not, Google was the first to make a large language model like ChatGPT, but it did not release it. Google's business model is based upon search engine searches working well in getting you good information. Search engine optimization has always been Google's enemy. And I think that they understood that once large language models were available easily to anyone who publishes a website, it was going to be a threat to their business model and their revenue stream. And that's something that we're going to start to notice as the internet becomes less and less useful for information retrieval. A really interesting corollary of this is that you can also use generative AI to write and publish books on Amazon. So even paper books are not going to be a place that's immune to the impact of automated generative text. So I think we're going to start looking for more credible sources of information. We're not going to trust something just because it shows up on Google or it's in a book. So the way that we retrieve and search for information is going to change in the midterm, and that is going to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Sam Altman also made a similar analogy at the hearing when he was saying basically that it was like the release of Photoshop, when, you know, people were forced to adapt. They were forced to get used to the fact that now basically any image can be faked and just, you know, created digitally. The same goes for information now. And as you said, yes, I also have heard about whole books generated with AI, and actually some people making millions of dollars on Amazon just plain generating books with AI. And it just still seems crazy to me because it is so unreliable. Like, I personally still use ChatGPT on a daily basis, and I probably use it more than Google already, but I verify every single piece of information, because I think it's crucial to understand that not all of it is true. And that's something that most people don't quite grasp yet because of how factual it seems.
Definitely true. On the positive side, though, there's a big push from a lot of us to make generative AI more reliable and precise, and to ensure that the information it provides is factual. So the jury's still out on how long that's going to take. And it will be still easy to produce propaganda at scale. But it will also be possible, we hope, to generate more precise and reliable information in the near future.
Yes, I hope so. And thank you very much, Rebecca, for this enlightening discussion. The last question I have is, where can people learn more about Reliant AI and your work?
That's a very good question, because our website's a bit light on information at the moment. But we do have a website at buildaligned.ai, and we have some LinkedIn pages, and happy to chat with anyone who reaches out to us there.
All right, great. Thank you very much for joining us and shedding light on these pressing issues. And I hope to see you soon on a Generative AI conference.
Looking forward to it.